Good morning. Hello and welcome to Line One, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. One question I always ask a patient during our visit is about drug allergies. Penicillin is a common response. I will then always ask, well, what happens when you take penicillin? Another common answer is, well, I'm not actually sure. My mom and dad told me that I had a reaction as a child. According to the CDC, about 10% of people report being allergic to penicillin. However, in only about 1% of people are they actually allergic to penicillin. Another interesting point is that 80% of people with penicillin allergy lose their sensitivity after 10 years. Why is any of this important? Well, that's what our guest today is here to help us find out. Today, I am pleased to be joined by allergy and immunology specialist, Dr. Eric Meyer from the Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Center of Alaska. You can also be part of our conversation. If you have a question or a comment, please call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage at 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. Or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Dr. Meyer, it's a pleasure to have you here on Line One today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I want to give you an opportunity here to introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us a little bit about yourself, about your training, how you got into this line of practice.
Yes, I initially did medical school in Texas in the 90s. And after medical school, I entered an internal medicine residency and then practiced internal medicine with the Air Force up until 2003, at which point I proceeded with an allergy immunology fellowship, also with the Air Force, and ended up doing my last assignment up here at Elmendorf, when it was still called Elmendorf. And in 2007, I got out of the Air Force and stayed locally in private practice, where I've been ever since.
That's great. That's great. I was Air Force as well, as you know. It's a wonderful way to get good doctors in Alaska. What got you interested in studying allergies, asthma, and immunology?
That's a great question. My first interest was when I was an internal medicine resident, just looking at the disease processes, the complexity of immunology, and actually the profound impact on quality of life that we can have on patients day in and day out, improving just how they feel in the, every day and making them feel better. And I found it fascinating and actually very rewarding compared to some of the other things that I used to take care of as an internist.
Yeah, I can totally see that. I mean, allergies, particularly asthma, my goodness, it can be very impactful to the lives of yourself, but also your family members, kids, that sort of thing. So I'm glad that's a rewarding career for you. We may have an opportunity to talk about multiple drugs today, but I want to start with the main one, which is our focus, is penicillin. Let's start with kind of the basics of penicillin. What is penicillin? Why is it such an important drug for us?
Yeah, that is a very, very good question. Any of you know, penicillin was actually first discovered by Alexander Fleming back in 1928 when he was working in his lab. But it took a while for that to progress into more clinical work. It was at Oxford University, not until 1941, where they isolated it and treated the very first patient. It was actually a police officer that had in Oxford that had a pretty severe infection, including abscesses. And they used penicillin, and the way they described it was a pretty remarkable, startling improvement in his condition after 24 hours. And that's what got it started. So even though it was discovered in 1928, it really took more than a decade before it started being used clinically, but it really revolutionized infectious disease management for humans.
Was that the first or one of the first antibiotics that was developed?
I, I think it was one of the first. I think that we're also working with Solfa at the time. I don't know the dates on that one, but yeah, that's around that time when we first finally started using antibacterials with remarkable improvement.
Yeah, it's just
And penicillin is
shocking.
important because it's not only one antibiotic, it's really a kind of multiple chemically related substances that we use. And as you know, there's related family class antibiotics that are similar to it. So it really evolved into kind of the beginning, like an umbrella term of penicillin, and then kind of spreading down to multiple different kinds of antibiotics after that.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable to think that prior to the 1950s, really, we didn't have antibiotics. I mean, for the most part, I mean, people had infections that they have today, and there was no great treatment for it. It is absolutely remarkable how far we've come from penicillin too, and all the broad spectrum antibiotics, which we'll talk about. But and it's a broad spectrum drug, isn't it? Or is it? Do you consider it more focal? Or I mean, it's first line therapy for a lot of infections.
Yeah, and like I said, we have different generations of penicillin from first down to fourth generation, depending on what we're targeting. You know, some of them are more specialized, more focused. But you know, as the first line agent, yeah, more broad spectrum. It's cheap, and it's actually very important when you think about the repercussions of having so many people labeled penicillin allergic. Recent publication in Annals of Allergy in children specifically noted that. Prescription costs are 30 to 40% higher in patients that have a suspected penicillin allergy. So it's really very important to accurately identify patients that are truly allergic and delabel those that are not, because it reduces healthcare costs, it improves patient outcomes, and it actually in hel really, really helps the very important public health fight against antibiotic resistance as you're using super high-powered antibiotics. I mean, you're using vancomycin for simple infections when you could be using penicillin.
Yeah, no, this, and we'll get into that in a little bit as well. It's incredibly important that penicillin be available for use. I remember I had my, gosh, it was a strep throat a couple years back, and I just went into my doctor, and I thought, okay, well, I'm gonna have to get put on some big old antibiotic, and she just gave me some penicillin, which was pennies on the dollar. And it cleared up that infection is super quick. So it's a very effective drug when you can use it. Which, you know, it's if you can't use it because of an allergy, it does change the community resistance. It changes the interactions for people, the effectiveness of it. So we'll get into that in a little bit, but let's take one step back. Let's talk about drug allergies in general. What is it about the body? I know there's a couple different types of hypersensitivities, but what is it for penicillin when we say that you're allergic to a drug? We'll get into this, the side effects and the actual symptoms of it, but physiologically or pathophysiologically, what's going on with the body during an allergy?
Yeah,
Or
that's a very good question. And not to get too terribly technical, as we break down hypersensitivity reactions, there's really four big categories, also known as Gill and Coombs. And when we talk about true allergy or the classic allergy, also known as immunoglobulin E-mediated allergy, which is the allergic antibody, that's what we call a type 1 reaction, which is an immediate reaction. Immunoglobulin E antibodies bind to cells in the body that then pretty rapidly degranulate and cause all the different symptoms that we see with allergies. There are other hypersensitivity reactions that we don't typically necessarily see with medications. There can be delayed allergy, though, what we call a type 4 or a cell-mediated allergy that is delayed, which is a little bit different mechanistically. Typical delayed allergies are poison ivy that takes 3 4 days to occur, as opposed to the immediate sensitivity like you see with for example, the food allergy where you eat a peanut and you immediately react. So it's kind of like the difference between immediate sensitivity and delayed sensitivity. And probably the most important characteristic is that these immediate sensitivities, specifically when you're talking about ingestible or injectable allergens, is that they can potentially be fatal. So it's very important to identify them, since fatal anaphylaxis is obviously the worst outcome.
Yeah, and that's what everyone fears, you know, when they say they've had an allergy to a drug or something, or they had a reaction when they were a kid. You know, people fear that they're going to take this drug and they're going to die. But in reality, that's really not going to happen. And we can talk about the testing as we go along. So let's talk about an allergy versus a side effect. You know, for penicillin specifically, what are the common allergic reactions that you would see? And you can range them from mild to severe. And then how is that different than what would you expect to see as a side effect of that medication?
Yeah, great question. Great question. Most of the patients that we see labeled are going to be either side effects or some non-allergic type symptom. A true type 1 mediated allergy, be it penicillin or any other substance, is going to be your classic immediate, you know, hives, swelling, also known as angioedema, which can affect your upper airway, your throat, which will be the most dangerous and most commonly the cause of fatalities is the closing of the upper airway. But it can affect the lungs, leading to wheezing, asthma-type symptoms. And then you get really, it's a multi-organ system immediate reactivity. It can cause gastrointestinal symptoms, classically nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, but in conjunction with some of these other symptomatologies. And the reason I say that is because gastrointestinal side effects are probably one of the most common side effects we see with antibiotics. Antibiotics are notorious for upsetting your stomach and maybe even leading to some vomiting. So it's always important, and the pharmacist will tell you, make sure you take this medicine with food. But isolated, just upset stomach, that's going to be your classic side effect. So that's probably the most important thing to distinguish with gastrointestinal symptoms is that I'm telling you yes and no, in that yes, nausea and vomiting can occur with anaphylaxis, but usually in conjunction with something else. So you're looking at a true allergy being a multi-organ, including skin, respiratory, gastrointestinal, and then, of course, you know, cardiovascular, that can lead to shock and obviously death.
Okay. So in
other
general,
common side effects of penicillin, or for that matter, any medication, are your classic, you know, I get headaches or fatigue or drowsiness, things like that, that are not necessarily allergies. People can tell you that they get drowsy with a certain medication. Like I've even had patients tell me that they think they're allergic to Benadryl because it makes them drowsy. No, that's a classic side effect, which is a direct end result of the mechanism of action of the medication.
Yeah. I think that's a nausea, upset stomach is such a common side effect. It does not mean you're allergic to the medications. And then we're going to get into the subtleties of this as well. I have a call coming in. So let me take a minute to remind our listeners of our call-in number statewide at 1-888-353-5752, in Anchorage at 907-550-8433, or email me at line1@alaskapublic.org. We have a call from Lauren in Anchorage. Lauren, welcome to Line 1, your health connection.
Hello, thank you for this show. I just wanted to ask, in high school, I was told I'm allergic to penicillin mold. And should I get retested now that it's been a good 40 years?
Sure. Do you remember why you were told that, Lauren?
I had allergy tests done on me, and that's what they told me.
Okay, great question. Thank you. I'll pose this to our expert here, Dr. Meyer, and we'll have you take your answer off the air. Thank you. Dr. Meyer, Lauren was told she was allergic to penicillin mold about 40 years ago. What are your thoughts on this?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you asked that question. I test for penicillium mold every day. That's part of our panel. Penicillium species mold is actually the way Fleming discovered the properties of penicillin and the antibacterial properties of it. But being allergic to penicillium mold absolutely does not mean that you're allergic to penicillin class antibiotics. Penicillium mold, when you have an allergy to it, is going to cause your classic allergy symptoms that you see if you were allergic to pollen or cats and dogs, you know, runny, sneezy, itchy. But yes, so when we test for penicillium here in our clinic, and our nurses are trained to do this, when we go over the skin test or the allergy test results and we say, look, you're positive to penicillium, we make it clear that that has nothing to do with the penicillin antibiotic. It's just another allergen.
Well, that's great. Lauren, if you're still listening, looks like you are safe to at least try that medication in the future. Dr. Meyer, why does someone become allergic to penicillin? Is this a genetic thing? Is it environmental? What's the research show on this?
Yeah, I don't think it's fully understood. Now, we know that allergies or the state of being atopic, which is kind of like the allergic phenotype, can certainly be genetic in nature. So we do see allergies, hay fever, which is a misnomer, or allergic rhinitis, because allergic rhinitis doesn't really cause a fever, but allergies in that sense, asthma, even food allergies, we do see kind of a genetic predisposition where parents and siblings are allergic to pollen and dander or foods. That can certainly be genetic in nature, and it can pass on from family to family. But we have not seen that with medications. So if you have a parent that is allergic to penicillin and you have never taken penicillin, you are not at an increased risk of having a penicillin allergy. Some of the risk factors that we do see is certainly if you are a very allergic person to begin with, as a whole, you might have maybe an increased incidence of having a penicillin allergy just because of the nature that you are an allergic or atopic person. Prior history of multiple medication allergies can increase your risk. We know that this multiple chemical or multiple antibiotic sensitivity is kind of a specific phenotype of certain patients that are just predisposed to having this reactivity. Taking penicillin frequently at high doses and/or parenterally or by the IV route can also increase the risk of developing the allergy. Think of when we had the explosion of latex allergy in the 80s due to universal precautions from HIV. It was the patients that had the most exposure and the closest exposure that ended up having more allergies. The patients that have recurrent surgeries, nurses, for example. So it was an exposure and a level of exposure and quantity of exposure that led to the increased risk. So that's what we, I think, see with medications, but not family history. That is very important to note. So we have, geez, in the last year, I probably had a number of patients come in that have been avoiding penicillin their entire life because of family history, and we just immediately tell them that no. Now that comes with a little bit level of anxiety. So we help get the patient through that, and sometimes even do some brief challenges to reassure them in that respect. But no, it is not an increased risk.
Okay, awesome. Well, I have an email here from Mona. She says that she had her wisdom teeth removed 35 years ago, and she had some itchy hives after taking penicillin. And she asks, do I need to cite that as an allergy from here on, as she has been doing her whole life? What are your thoughts for Mona?
The perfect candidate of our delabeling program, someone that should really, really be seen. Evaluated, and it all comes back to the history and what the pretest probability and the risk of having a subsequent reaction. You always think of hives, since hives are part of the of it, what we call a type 1 or IgE mediated reaction. Yeah, there's going to be concern. Could that have been an allergic reaction? But we're talking here a remote allergy, many, many years ago. We do know that allergies and IgE decrease over time. So we do see people that even if they had a true IgE-mediated allergy 30, 40 years ago, there's a chance that faded over time and should be evaluated to see if they've outgrown it and it's gone away. So doing an evaluation, which we'll talk about here shortly about regarding testing and challenges, is very, very important to delabel. She's a perfect candidate for delabeling. And just even looking at the most recent practice parameter on the management of drug hypersensitivity, which again is very aggressive. This is kind of a mission that the American Academy and College of Allergy has placed upon us to do this delabeling program to really help patients like our caller to get that medication off the list sooner than later. When it's been really that remote, the risk is so low that we frequently don't even require allergy skin testing that we'll talk about. Sometimes just a simple challenge in the office to prove that the patient is no longer allergic, it can be very, very helpful.
Excellent. Well, with that, we're going to take a quick mid-break here. You are listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. If you have a question or a comment for our guest today, call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752. Or in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. After this short break, we will continue our discussion on penicillin and other drug allergies with allergy and immunology specialist, Dr. Eric Meyer. Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined today by allergy and immunology specialist, Dr. Eric Meyer. Do you have questions about drug allergies? If you have a question or a comment, call us statewide at 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752 or in Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. Or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Dr. Meyer, in doing reading for this show, and you touched on this before the break, I was reading that sometimes in penicillin, the allergy can clear itself or lose sensitivity after about 10 years. Is that true? How does that happen? Why does that happen?
Yes, that's correct. I briefly touched on it before the break. But really, immune reactions and immunity fades over time. We see IgE dropping over time. And it has to do with lack of exposure. The immune system kind of fades away. Same with vaccinations. We frequently get boosters of vaccines like tetanus since immunity wanes over time. So if you've been avoiding penicillin, the immune system is no longer exposed to it, that IgE will drop over time to the point where it's no longer clinically evident. So it's definitely a time-dependent wane in immunity that we see.
That's great to know, because especially, a lot of people, like I said at the very beginning, it's like they were told as kids, and even if they did have an allergy as a child, they may not have an allergy anymore. So this penicillin delabeling program is super important. To touch on that, the next question I have is penicillin's been around a long time. It's a mild antibiotic. So what's the big deal of just not using penicillin? I've been told I have an allergy. Okay, just give me a different antibiotic. Why do I have to take penicillin? And there's a really good answer for this, and I want to give you the chance to explain to the listeners why it is a big deal.
Yeah, it is, and I briefly mentioned it earlier. It's just using other antibiotics, more costly antibiotics, more high powered antibiotics are really detrimental not only to the patient but to society as a whole. I briefly mentioned prescription costs can be 30% to 40% higher in patients that have a suspected penicillin allergy, just because of the nature of the cost of some of these alternate antibiotics that we use. So not only can we reduce healthcare costs, but we actually improve patient outcomes. Why use something as high powered as vancomycin IV for a simple infection? And same thing, public health, how does that help us? Because we want to try to fight antibiotic resistance. We're trying to save some of these more high-powered antibiotics for more serious infections. So we start using these antibiotics in the community day in and day out. We're going to start generating more drug resistance. And then when the time comes when you need these antibiotics, it really will pose a public health problem. So not only it's cost, but it's public health issue and an issue for the patient itself, having to use some of these more high-powered antibiotics for them as an individual.
Yeah, and I want to touch on that too. It's for our listeners out there. What happens with just like with COVID? COVID has been continually mutating, and then the vaccines become less effective over time. The same thing happens with bacteria in infections as they evolve, and the more they're exposed to an antibiotic to kill them, they actually will evolve to become resistant to an antibiotic, and that antibiotic won't work to kill them anymore. It's evolution. And so if you're just throwing the highest power antibiotics at an infection, eventually we're going to run out of antibiotics, and that's going to be a big problem. So if something can be treated with a lower level antibiotic like a penicillin, we should absolutely be doing that. Is that fair to say, Dr. Meyer?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is correct.
Okay. I want to take a call here from Anna Marie calling in Anchorage. Welcome to line one, Anna Marie.
Hi, is that me?
Yeah, we can hear you. What can we answer for you?
Okay. Sorry, the name didn't quite get right, but that's okay.
Oh.
I had a head cold over a week ago. It turned into pneumonia. And so I went to the doctor, and because of the penicillin allergy, which I've had just only because my parents told me I had it, and I'm one of seven kids, and I'm the only one that has the penicillin allergy. So I don't know if that means anything, but so they, and I could have sworn in the past that I've been given amoxicillin with no problems, but this time I've been given levofloxacin.
Mm-hmm.
And after, this is my seventh day, it doesn't seem to be doing as much as maybe when I had amoxicillin. Is that just in my head, or is it a more powerful drug, or?
That's a great question. And, we're going to try to answer the penicillin part. I don't want to give you too much medical advice without, being able to see you or examine you. But Dr. Meyer, what are your thoughts on this question here regarding the history of the penicillin allergy and maybe treatment for her pneumonia?
Yeah, a perfect example of somebody that should enter the delabeling program and get that penicillin removed. Somebody who's been labeled because of a family history really, really does not need to avoid it. So that's where our delabeling program comes in, is to really help patients like the caller be able to remove that label. So you avoid using other antibiotics that could potentially be, more costly, maybe have more side effects, et cetera. It's really the recommendation is very, very strong from our allergy organizations, where they recommend really a proactive effort to delabel patients with a reported penicillin allergy. They actually even say that they recommend testing is not even recommended for patients that don't have a history that is consistent with a penicillin allergy or family history, that they could just get it. But since there is a level of anxiety from having this allergy, I've been told for decades that you have this allergy, that's where we can still help by doing challenges in the clinic with observation to reassure the patient that it's okay. So we do those all the time, and it's been a very successful program.
Thanks, Dr. Meyer. We're going to talk about that next. I do want to have a question here from Sandy, two questions actually. So she says that 40 years ago, she had a head-to-toe urticaria after being on oral amoxicillin for 2 days. She wants to know if she should get tested for a penicillin allergy.
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're doing here. It's remote, and it wasn't life-threatening. And we'll talk about when should we not test, when should we not challenge. We'll talk about that later. But hives, head to toe, many, many, many years ago, perfect example of somebody that, even if it was a true allergy, it's probably most likely now gone, or maybe it wasn't an allergy. It's very important to note that acute urticaria is very commonly triggered by the infection itself, the stress in the body from the infection itself. And the antibiotic always gets blamed. And that's how so many patients end up with penicillin on their list, because they had hives or urticaria as the only symptom. The new practice parameter clearly states that they actually recommend direct challenges adults with a history of distant benign cutaneous reaction, such as urticaria.
Okay. Sandy has another question, not regarding penicillin, but a different type of allergy. Essentially, her child, who was young, from age maybe about 6 years old, was getting albuterol nebulizer treatments frequently. And at one point during a nebulizer, got increased wheezing. And then with the second treatment, began having stridor. And the pediatrician had thought that it wasn't an allergy to albuterol, but maybe one of the preservatives in it, benzyl conium chloride. Is this something that can be tested for, or would it be worth drug testing for an allergy to this sort of thing?
I think without knowing the details, obviously, this is definitely somebody that I would like to evaluate, do lung function spirometry. Because the way they describe it, when you get the stridor from an inhaler, the most common condition that I see triggering that is a condition called vocal cord dysfunction, which is a mimicker of asthma that causes an inappropriate closure of the vocal cords that can be triggered by irritants, inhalers, things like that. That would be, again, without getting the full story and the full history and looking at the data, that's the first thing I thought about as you were talking to me right now about the symptoms of stridor with an inhalation. That's what that sounds to me. And this is the perfect patient that I would bring into the clinic, do spirometry, see what it looks like, and maybe even challenge 2-albuterol and under close observation just to prove that it was that there is no allergy to 2-albuterol.
Okay. Margaret has a question here. She's 47. She's been told for many years that she has allergies to penicillin, sulfa, and clindamycin. As an 8-year-old, she had a rash with penicillin. She had a rash with sulfa as a teenager and a rash with clindamycin about 20 years ago when she was 26. She has taken erythromycin without any rashes. She wants to know if there's a chance that she could be delabeled for any one of these and if delabeling is covered by insurance.
A great question. Absolutely. That is what our delabeling program is all about. She is a very classic patient that I see in my clinic, a patient that has 3, 4, 5 antibiotics on the list, and they were always just rashes, skin findings that are not concerning. And again, we'll talk about the concerning ones that we do not test. But if it's just a rash, just some hives, multiple antibiotics, perfect candidate to have 1, 2, or all 3 of them removed from the list. Absolutely.
Great. Well, so let's, we got more calls coming in here and I'll filter them in as we go. But Dr. Meyer, we've mentioned it a bunch of times. This delabeling program, how do we get someone's drug allergies removed? There is specific tests that you guys do for this, not just taking history. So let's get into it. Let's talk about, what is skin testing versus oral dose testing? When you say that you want to delabel someone, how do you actually do this?
Yes. So again, we start with the history, and if the history does not suggest one of the conditions that we consider serious and dangerous, then we proceed. Now, most medications do not have standardized skin testing. What do I mean by skin testing? Skin testing is a time-honored way that allergists have tried to evaluate patients for allergies. Allergies, again, are IgE-mediated, which is the allergic antibody that binds to mast cells. And when you do skin testing and you're allergic to a substance, for example, cats, if you're allergic to the cats, the IgE is bound to mast cells underneath your skin. And if we do a prick puncture test on the skin and it cross-links the IgE receptors on the mast cells underneath your skin, you will generate a hive within 15 minutes at the site. So that will tell me, yeah, you're making IgE to that substance. So it's great for aero allergens and foods and things like that. For medications, unfortunately, it's a little bit more complex because there is no good standardized testing for pretty much most antibiotics. Penicillin being one exception. Through the decades, we've been able to come up with substances and reagents that we can use for testing. We call them major and minor determinants. And for penicillin, there's a commercially available major determinant called PrePen. It's called the major determinant because the majority of patients that react to penicillin will be positive to this PrePen. Minor determinants or minor determinant mixtures can be used for the other subgroup of patients that can increase the sensitivity of detecting an allergy in a patient whose major determinant was negative. Now, there is no commercially available minor determinant mixture, but we use penicillin G as a surrogate for the minor determinant. So for penicillin, we do a series of skin tests, typically in the arm, starting with what we call the prick puncture test. And then as the testing is negative, then we proceed with higher dosing intradermal testing. And if the series of skin tests are all negative, then studies have shown for penicillin specifically that if all your testing is negative, your risk of reacting is really less than 3%, which is very, very good. So we do have good testing for penicillin. But then to confirm it, we proceed with a 3-step challenge. What we mean by a three-step challenge is we actually challenge the patient in the clinic. We typically do a 1/100th of the dose, followed by a 1/10th of the dose, and then at full dose at 30-minute intervals, and then we observe the patient for an hour thereafter. And when all is said and done, they can leave the office with penicillin off their list.
That's great.
Most of
So,
the other antibiotics don't have standardized testing. Some of them might have some published abstracts or published data talking about non-irritant concentrations that we can sometimes use. And then again, if the pretest probability and the risk is low and we do some of the testing, we always follow it up with a challenge because what we're trying to prove is that the patient can actually take the antibiotic. And we're very successful with that.
okay. So for penicillin specifically, you do have a skin test that can be used at least first to determine if there's a reaction. And then you move on to the oral testing, and that's three phases. So it's a 1/100th of a dose, so a tiny micro dose of this. And then you watch for about a half an hour. If there's no reactions, you go ahead and move on to a 10th dose. Watch again for 30 minutes, and if there's no reaction, proceed to just a full dose.
Exactly.
Okay. And what are you watching for?
We're watching for classic IgE immediate reactions. So immediate hives, swelling, difficulty breathing, objective evidence. We listen to them, vital signs. I've had people in the past that I've done, for example, an allergy shot, and they've had an acute reaction and they vomit right there on the spot. So that your classic multi-organ acute systemic reactions. We always tell patients to make sure that they eat breakfast before they come for the challenge because they will have an upset stomach. So we reassure them. I tell them, you're probably going to get a little bit of an upset stomach, maybe a little bit of nausea. That is normal as long as it's just isolated.
Okay. Now, is this, you say you're doing this in the office, so obviously this is not done in the hospital, but let's say someone does have a reaction. Do you guys have a specific area in your office that you're doing this? I'm assuming you guys have all of the stuff to treat an allergic reaction.
Absolutely. Just like we do allergy shots, and allergy shots can lead to anaphylaxis. So we have a full setup for treating acute allergic reactions. We have a dedicated challenge suite, actually, that we use every single day for both medication and drug challenge, medication and food challenges. So we have a full setup to treat patients acutely in the event of an allergic reaction, and that includes administering epinephrine plus adjunct medications.
Okay, so if someone does have a reaction, you guys obviously have all the medications, epinephrine, and all of the supporting stuff to treat that if that were to happen.
Exactly.
Awesome. I want to take our second and last break. You are listening to Line One, your health connection. If you have a question or a comment for Dr. Meyer, call us statewide at 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752, or in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. After this short break, we will continue our discussion on penicillin and other drug allergies with allergy and immunology specialist Dr. Eric Meyer. Welcome back to Line One, your health connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. I'm joined today by allergy and immunology specialist Dr. Eric Meyer. Do you have questions about drug allergies? If you have a question or a comment, call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. 1-888-353-5752, or in Anchorage, 907-550-8433. 907-550-8433. Or email me at lineone@alaskapublic.org. Dr. Meyer, we have about 20 minutes left. We're going to take some calls and emails here. We have a call from Kristen in Anchor Point. Kristen, welcome back to Line One.
Thank you. I'm wondering, there's been a lot in the news about syphilis has reared its ugly head in our society. And I am wondering if one of the reasons, I mean, one of the reasons, of course, people need to be concerned is if it goes untreated, it can kill you. But I'm wondering, is there a concern because it's showing resistance to antibacterial, to antibiotics?
Okay. Thank you, Kristen. Appreciate the call. If you remember right, last month I did a show specifically on syphilis and the treatments of that. And penicillin is actually a very effective and the first-line treatment against syphilis. Dr. Meyer, any comments about penicillin treatment in syphilis?
I don't treat syphilis much, but I agree with what you just said, that historically, this is one of the infections that has been, you know, through the years, been exquisitely responsive to penicillin. So as we learned even back in fellowship 20 or so years ago, is that if somebody's allergic to penicillin, truly allergic to penicillin, and they have syphilis, that's somebody that you probably want to desensitize, you know, in the intensive care unit, so they can actually receive penicillin to be able to treat it. I've never done that since I haven't seen a case myself, but yes, I think specifically for syphilis, it's important to treat with penicillin. And again, if the history is questionable, the labeling that patient, again, very important, so it can be used in the future.
Yeah, penicillin is absolutely incredibly effective for syphilis. And if you have an allergic reaction of, oh, okay, yeah, as a kid, I had some hives or something, that you would need to be delabeled so that you can get treated for that illness, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Email here from BA. As a 19-year-old, they had a UTI and was given penicillin, then developed a rash, so they were given sulfa, and then had an anaphylactic episode. They are now 73 years old, and they want to know if they're a candidate for testing.
Yeah, obviously, trying to get the details on what they mean by anaphylaxis is very important. I hear many different descriptions of what somebody thinks anaphylaxis is. So I would try to break that down, try to get the best possible history and the definition of that. But again, remote history, I think proceeding with evaluation for both would be very important. Now, sulfa is one of the classic antibiotics for which there is no skin testing available, but we do sulfa challenges all the time, depending on the pretest probability and after we do risk stratification. If I feel that the benefits outweigh the risk, I will definitely do a three-step challenge to sulfa to get that off the list. And then with penicillin, we proceed as discussed.
Excellent. So we talked about, you know, the potential for having a reaction as you're observing them. But let's say for patients that have a history of a severe reaction to penicillin, so what would that look like? Let's say someone has true anaphylaxis, or they have what you call the scar or the Stevens-Johnson or something like that. So are those people candidates for testing, or are they not?
If it's true anaphylaxis, then yes. Now, we keep talking about delabeling people. And why is that? Because of the 10% of people that report penicillin allergy, really less than 1% of them are truly allergic. But that means that there are people that are truly allergic to penicillin, right? And so if the anaphylaxis is recent, but the patient still wants to know, then yeah, we test them. And those patients are very likely to have a positive skin test confirm. And okay, you are someone that truly has a penicillin allergy, one of those few patients. Fortunately, the risk for fatal penicillin allergy is very, very rare, at 0.0002 risk, I believe. But there are patients that are truly allergic to penicillin. Let's not forget that as we're talking about delabeling people here, there are still going to be these real allergic patients. But that's why skin testing for penicillin is such a great tool, because skin testing is extraordinarily safe. The skin test is positive, you're done. You're not going to challenge anybody. You have a penicillin allergy, and then you go and use an alternate agent. Now, there are other reactions that are not anaphylactic or IgE-mediated that raise concerns. And you mentioned the term SCAR, which stands for Severe Cutaneous Adverse Reactions. Patients who have had those, we do not test and we do not challenge, and they have to keep the antibiotic on their list for life. What are some of these examples? Stevens-Johnson, toxic epidermal necrolysis, DRESS, a drug reaction with eosinophilic systemic symptoms. Those are serious. So those we don't recommend testing, and we just recommend avoidance. And other severe reactions, you can have drug-induced autoimmune diseases like bullous pemphigus and drug-induced lupus. We don't recommend those either. And then some of the kind of like more specific organ-specific toxicities like cytopenias, nephritis, meningitis, pancreatitis, those are not allergic reactions. Those are truly, adverse drug reactions that are serious that probably should warrant keeping that medication on the list for life.
Okay, so
And you
there's a lot
mentioned,
of subtleties.
sorry, go ahead.
There's a lot of subtleties to it, and part of it is you guys sit down and really go into it and take a good history before doing any delabeling.
And yeah, it's incredible that through all the decades and history is still one of the most important things we do in medicine.
Excellent. We have a call from Ray from Eagle River. Ray, welcome to line one.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Since I was a child, I've been told I'm allergic to penicillin. I'm 70 years old now, and in the past, I've used myosins and whatnot. Where can I go for testing, and should I even bother at this point?
Great question. Ray, I have posed this to Dr. Meyer. What do you think, Dr. Meyer? Is it worth him getting testing now that he's in his 70s? And how would he, get in contact with doing testing?
Absolutely, absolutely. I've tested multiple patients in their 70s. Penicillin is still an important antibiotic forever. Live to 105, and so we're talking 35 years of life left here, and we want to make sure that these antibiotics are available to patients in their 70s or older. Talking to your primary care provider and having them send a referral to our clinic, and we get patients in. Most of our evaluations are routine, obviously. I mean, patients have had penicillin on their list for 20, 30 years, so it's not something we have to do tomorrow. There are more acute situations where we want to do it more quickly, and so we have a fast track program that the provider can call us, and we say, "Oh yeah, this is got a little bit more pressing. Let's get this patient in ASAP." So we have many different ways of getting patients in, but absolutely, absolutely, you should come in and see us.
Yeah, well, thank you, Ray. Hopefully, you have a long life ahead of you. And also, as we get older, sometimes infections get more common. So you want to be able to treat them. So I hope you do get testing there at the Allergy and Immunology Clinic. Insurance, is this something that is typically covered, or is this an out-of-pocket expense?
It's typically covered, and when patients come to see us, if there are ever any questions, we have a whole team that kind of crunches all the numbers. And but yeah, we typically I don't I've never seen anybody with use commercial insurance that would be declined. Obviously, there's more. I'm not an insurance expert, but there's always going to be the co-pays and deductibles and all that kind of stuff that is different from patient to patient. But yeah, we have a whole team that can crunch the numbers before anything's done. But I have not seen that be a factor for us not being able to take care of a patient.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned there's some patients that sometimes have a pressing need for this, and I want to touch on pregnant patients because I think that is important because penicillin is often used in pregnancy for multiple things. And so, if you have this history or potential penicillin allergy, it could be very important to delabel this. So, Dr. Meyer, talk a little bit about penicillin in pregnant patients.
Yes, very, very good question. So historically, skin testing has been contraindicated in pregnancy, just because so many things are contraindicated in pregnancy because there's so little data out there because nobody's going to study this. And so back in even when we trained 20 years ago, we would not test patients that were pregnant. The big exception back in fellowship, and we're talking over 20 years ago, was if somebody had syphilis and they were pregnant. We need to test them so they can get penicillin for their syphilis, right? More recently, as we've learned of the safety of these protocols, even within the last couple months, we've been able to take care of patients that are pregnant in their third trimester that need penicillin for the group B strep. I think that's probably one of the most common things I've had questions about. So we're happy to get these patients fast tracked if they need the penicillin before delivery because of the group B strep, and that being the best antibiotic to use as opposed to having to use again one of the more high powered antibiotics. So, and again, depending on the pretest probability and the pretest risk, now that we know that a lot of these patients may not even need skin testing, again, a remote history of a benign cutaneous reaction might just require a quick challenge in the clinic without even needing to skin test. So yes, absolutely. We're doing a lot more for our pregnant patients that might require penicillin.
Yeah, that's good because I mean there are a lot of antibiotics that are not safe to give in pregnancy, and penicillin, as far as I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Meyer, is a safe medication when pregnant.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, we have a email here from Martin, who wants us to talk briefly about sulfa allergies. He was in the Peace Corps. And they had given sulfa combination drugs to Peace Corps members back in the past to prevent some malaria. And a couple of his colleagues developed Steven Johnson syndrome. So he wants to know, let's see, does allergy require sensitizing dose first? So let's if we have a few minutes left, let's spend some on sulfa and cross-reactivity with other drugs.
Yeah, so sulfa, again, got to go back to the history. If the history is Stevens Johnson or any form of scar, you're done. Unfortunately, that medication's on the list for life. If it's just that rash, maybe a benign maculopapular rash. And what are my go-to questions? My go-to questions, if it's questions like, did your skin fall off? Did you peel all over your body? Did you have ulcers in your mouth or your vagina? Things that point towards Stevens Johnson or TEN, then we're done. But if it was strictly just like a maculopapular rash, because we know, drug eruptions, maculopapular drug eruptions are very common. They're not dangerous. They may or may not occur with readministration, but if we can prove that it's not an IG-mediated process by doing a quick step, a three-step challenge, then we know, well, you might be able to get this antibiotic in the future for an infection, may or may not develop a maculopapular eruption or what we call a drug rash, which in most cases are benign, then that's okay. But if any evidence of a scar, then that medication should be avoided, and that's where the patients need to use an alternate agent.
Okay, so you do have,
Cross-reactivity is a great question,
yeah.
which I'm glad you asked because I wanted to touch a little bit on cephalosporins. Historically, what you've seen in the literature is up to 10% cross-reactivity. And what was initially felt to be the cross-reactivity because of the beta-lactam ring, that really wasn't the case. It seems to be that that where we see this cross-reactivity tends to be more of the side chains that we see with the cephalosporins. So we're really looking at far, far lower than 5% cross-reactivity between penicillins and cephalosporins. So if there's a true allergy, then you want to go the route of looking at these side chains. And there's lists of side chains that doctors can look at, and then picking a different cephalosporin with a different side chain is usually going to be okay. But again, for the vast majority of patients, we're not necessarily proving that there's an allergy. We're just trying to prove that it wasn't even an allergy to begin with. So same thing with cephalosporins. We'll do the non-standardized skin testing for the ones that we have available, followed by the three-step challenge. So that's where that cross-reactivity comes in. It has to be with the side chains of all these beta-lactam antibiotics, so not the beta-lactam ring.
Okay. Yeah, it's I mean with our patients, for me as a surgeon, typically our protocol is within 30 minutes of our incisions we'll give first generation cephalosporin like Ancef or something to prevent infection. But then I sometimes I come across people that are allergic to penicillin and I think okay, well if it's just a rash or hives I can still give the Ancef. But if it's something like anaphylaxis then I may need to choose a different antibiotic. So what you're telling me is that the cross-reactivity is actually quite low, and I'd probably be okay giving Ancef in most situations.
And if the story was anaphylaxis, which always raises more concern, those are patients that we want to catch early, like pre-op or even the primary care doctor. It's like, wait a minute, why do you have this on your list? Maybe let's get that delabeled for the case when they come see you as a surgeon. It's already taken care of, and then you don't even have to worry it because you're in the OR. And I go, oh my God, what am I going to use? Now I'm not sure. You say anaphylaxis, but now I don't have time. So now I have to use an alternate agent. So if we can capture those patients before they go to the operating room, that gives you options as a surgeon.
Yeah, no, I like options. So, good. Well, Dr. Meyer, we have about a minute left. I want to give you an opportunity to provide any closing thoughts to our listeners, maybe contact information, website address if patients want to enter this delabeling program.
Yeah, so we have our website. If you type in Allergy Alaska on your web browser. You'll see our head. It's called the Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Center of Alaska. We're here in the Providence campus. There's a wealth of information on the website. You can always contact us. And we always like to be have the primary care provider be involved. It's the kind of a team approach. But again, depending on the urgency, we're getting these patients in. We're doing medication challenges pretty much every single day. We have a whole suite dedicated to this. So kind of in conjunction with your primary care provider, get in touch with us we'll determine the urgency of the need and we'll get patients in.
That's great. Do you guys have a phone number for patients if they have more information?
Yes, our number here is 562-6228-907.
Okay, excellent. Well, I hope that this has been a helpful show for a lot of people. I think this is a big, it's not, a life-threatening thing, but it's certainly a very impactful thing to someone's life, particularly if they get an infection later on, to be able to treat with penicillin. So I want to say a special thanks to our guest for being with us today, allergy and immunology specialist Dr. Eric Meyer from the Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Center of Alaska. Thanks to our audio engineer, Chris Hyde, and our producer, Madeline Rose. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing us at line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Justin Clark. Stay healthy, Alaska.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.